What up, world? It's your boy E letting you know we are now proud members of the Visionaries Global Media family. That's right, catch us Wednesdays on Visionaries Global Media.
Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
This is Nattering with E, with Eric Friedlander. What up, world? It's your boy E coming at you from the Nattering with E studio. Today is episode 50 of Nattering with E and its sub-shows all combined together. So I figure, as I've been talking recently about my love for the Lex Express, who better to talk to me about it than someone who is just an inspiration in this wrestling world and knows more about wrestling than anybody I know, Mr. Phil Rhea from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks. So, Phil, what's going on, man?
Episode 50? This is 50 you have now going on?
50. Yeah, that's right, man.
I'm almost 50, so it's appropriate. So we're good. We're good. I'm good, man. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate the love. It's a very, very cool that I still get to jump on someone else's podcast every once in a while. It's a nice community that we have, and it gets bigger and bigger the more I've done this since 2012. So it's been a nice ride. So thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate all the love.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I've been wanting to for a while, but I was also like, you know, let me get in at least 50 episodes first before I start asking like people who know way more about wrestling than I do to come on.
So. Nah, it's fine. I mean, it's really not what you know. It's how you, I feel like it's a little bit about what you know, but it's also how you deliver it. Like if you can, anybody can talk about what you want to talk about. If you have a certain way of delivering it and you develop a following and then you get a fan base, that brings out more of creativity with the person that's doing it. So it's, you know, whether you've done 50 or 5, you know what I'm saying? If you're delivering it a certain way and you're getting people to listen, you're moving the algorithm little needle thingy there, whatever they want to call it now. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's the goal, right? You know, you have a platform and now you want people to listen, and that's how it goes. So yeah, man. It's a nice community that we have. Sometimes it's really good, sometimes it's not really good. But that's, I guess, with every subculture, right? You get that there's nice parts of it, there's bad parts of it. So, but pro wrestling is my mistress. It's been my my love for a very, very long time, and I can't get it out of my system. So,
I'm the same exact way. So, have you ever like you've watched it all the way through from like youth to present, or did you take breaks at all, or were you always into it?
No, I never took a break, unfortunately. I mean, I did. I started watching it in late 83. Yeah. So I figure it was like 7. My math is terrible. So I was 8, almost 8 years old. I was 8 years old. Yeah, 8 years old I was. Yeah. So from there, and then when I started my career in my early 20s, I didn't watch a lot of it live. I just recorded everything and then binged like on the weekends.
Yeah.
Because my career was very, very demanding at the time. I was working like 15 hours a day, 5 days a week. And then, you know, just, I didn't want to watch, I didn't want to come home and watch another 2 hours of wrestling, you know, and then and actually 4 hours of wrestling, if you count Nitro also, and then ECW, which is another hour. So yeah, man, I never took a break. A lot of my friends did and went back. I never did. I casually just, you know, either kept it to myself or just talked to a lot of people who loved it. I just, you know, but I never did, you know, I never stopped watching, you know. I never did.
Yeah, I'm the same way in the sense, like, I never stopped watching, but also before I found these like communities per se, like stuff on like fan boards and now Discord with the Wizards Discord where we met. I used to keep it to myself because like where I am, it seemed to be like a faux pas if you watched wrestling past like 7 or 8 years old. So I was like, no, I love this shit though. It's so good.
Yeah, which is so weird because I played that I don't know how old you are, but when I was in my late early teens, I played like this fantasy wrestling thing in the back. You get it from the back of the wrestling magazines. Mm-hmm. And we would have like, and if you wanted to like, it was a wrestling bulletin, right? And you made up a wrestler's name and you picked out the holds and you mailed it in. It was a mail in play. You mailed in money in every month. And you would get like your results back, and then every move had a point system to it. So it would, the highest point, you'd win like a title, and they would send you championships. They would send you plaques and stuff like that. And then if you wanted to talk to another manager, we didn't have social media. You didn't put your phone number in a bulletin while you were cutting a promo. So they would send an extra dollar and reach out to so-and-so in this Fed and so-and-so in that Fed. And a third of my guys that were in my stable were from your area. So it's so weird that area shunned the wrestling out, man.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. Yeah, I'm born in 88, so 35, going on 36.
That's when I started playing fantasy wrestling. That's great. Thanks.
Amazing.
Nice.
So it's funny because like my earliest memories are like they started in 94. So I guess I would have been about six. Around mm-hmm. then, I'm like just loving Lex Luger at the time, and years later I go back and I watch that stuff and I'm just like, Brett screwed Lex Luger. I know we texted about it a bit on Messenger, and you're like, nope, you're just clearly wrong. And I had this whole theory. I don't know if you've listened to any of the previous episodes.
Yeah. You're not the only one to have this theory. So you're not alone. You're just wrong. But yeah. either way, I mean.
Yeah. Because I was convinced, you know, that after he slams Yokozuna, like he has all this momentum, goes to the Rumble, and then it's never sat right with me for almost, 30 years now of the fact that he defended Brett as opposed to like just tossing him out. Cause to you or me or to anybody thinking about this logically, the guy with one leg, that's the guy you want to toss out first. Right. But he did the honorable thing and he defended him for most of that 94 Rumble, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean, that would make sense. Right. I just, my disdain for him started a little before that because I know you've heard me mention I didn't have cable until like 89, 90 in my area. Mm-hmm. So I would get tapes or I would go to friends' houses to watch like, you know, NWA, then turning it to WCW and whatnot. And then I would get tapes from, you know, through that fantasy wrestling nonsense I was playing. I also started tape trading from the magazines too. So I would be getting tapes from Mid-South and Florida. And Minneapolis, like the Midwest, like, you know, like AWA, stuff like that, right? And for Luger, for me, it made sense that he didn't do anything significant after come to find out why. Because on paper, he's supposed to be, I mean, look at him, you know, on paper and you look at him, he's a specimen, you know, and he was a beast. I mean, and What happened was, I feel like when Vince started the whole bodybuilding federation thingy, right? He needed a poster child, so he was moving away from the Hulkamania and all the and then heavily adopting the gimmicks and all that stuff. Like says, so he takes on Luger as his spokesperson. You know, now Luger's already had a reputation, and that's what. And I didn't know the reputation. I was a kid. But you're bringing him in. You're like, this is the logical step. The next big guy, you know, he's the guy, and he was supposed to be the guy, but he wasn't. And he had so many opportunities to be the guy, and he wasn't. And there's a reason for that. Like, this, how do you get the keys to the car and not be able to drive the car? You know what I'm saying? It's like winning a game show and not here. They give you the big cardboard check, right? Mm-hmm. You've won $10 million, but you don't really win $10 million. They take the check from you, and now you're still on paper. You're a winner, but you're not the winner. And it made me angry. In 92, they brought him in to be the next guy. And then they brought him in, and then Bobby Heenan snatches him, which is the perfect heel manager for him. They gave him the whole narcissist gimmick, and I was like, this is a typical Vince move. Mm. Didn't want to use his name because Vince didn't build him, so Vince didn't build him. He ain't getting the royal treatment, right?
Yeah.
But that was the thing, and they run him all the way into the Lex Expresses, which is where you're going to be. I mean, we can go. I don't know how far you want to go back, E. I don't know if you want to do. I mean, we can go as far back as you need to build it up. But I don't know how far you want to. If you want to just go at Lex Express and go from there, or.
Yeah, we can do that.
I mean, so, you know, it was the bodybuilding thing didn't work out, obviously. Hmm. You know, so he shows up at, I think, the Royal Rumble, which is right before you started watching, which is like a year or two before.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And that was it. He gets the push, you know, the all American push. Hogan had a lot to do with that too, because Hogan was on his way out. You know, he fulfilled a couple of dates in Japan, and then he went to Turner. And then like I said, Vince found his new guy. So now 4th of July, a very naive Phil. this is the best part. So now, where I grew up, right? I'm literally. Have you ever been to New York before?
No, never, never.
Okay, so you know how New York City is? It's split up into 5 boroughs. Mm-hmm. You have Queens, Bronx, Manhattan, Staten Island, right? Yeah. Brooklyn. Okay, so I lived in Queens, and where I lived in Queens bordered the north part of Brooklyn. But in the north part of Brooklyn, there was a train, a subway train that went to Manhattan, which is the longest borough and has everything there. We call it the city. That's where Madison Square Garden is. It's where, you know, it's the center of the universe, Times Square. It's awful now, but as a kid, it's everything. I'm 30 minutes from the city, literally 30 minutes. So I get the newspaper. I'm like, oh, this is great. You know? And they had they would cover wrestling. And there was a guy called the Slammer. He wore a mask, like a potato sack for a mask, as his picture, and he would write like wrestling. He had a wrestling column, and he advertised that the WWF was going to be at the Intrepid, which was a museum. It was a battleship, and now it's a museum for tourists and whatever. All right, so I figured I get to the west side, take me 45 minutes. I didn't think any. So now, right before noon, I decide, yeah, I'm going to jump on a train in the middle of the summer and go see Lex Luger and all the other guys. I really wanted to see the Steiners. Mm-hmm. I heard the Steiners were going to be there.
Yeah.
So like, all right, let's go. And I like Yokozuna too and all that. But, you know, and then I get to the subway station. I go all the way into the city, and then I get to where they are, and I can't even get to across the street. I can't even get to the pier where the battleship is docked.
Wow.
I can't get nowhere. There's hundreds and thousands of people. When you watch the video, there is no exaggeration. There is none. No exaggeration at all.
That's crazy. Yeah.
It was insane. There were wrestlers, football players. There were a bunch of guys in line trying to slam Yokozuna, who at the time had to be about 600 pounds, and that's being nice to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But like they treat even I'm basketball players were there too. I wish I had the names. I should have did the research. I apologize, but.
Yeah, no worries.
No, there was like it was a sight, and they even had it on the news, like the local news here in New York, where it was like they had the Warner Wolf had the sports thing at night on Channel 4, and then they had like the George Michael sports machine, which I think you guys got over there too. It was like a Saturday late night Saturday sports show. It was like ESPN ish or TSN ish for you.
Oh yeah.
Right,
yeah.
And it was called the George Michael sports machine. And he would show highlights from the week, not just from the day, from the entire week leading up to Saturday. So, honestly, this was great because then if he even played almost the whole thing, but he played the highlights of Luger actually slamming Yokozuna. And they brought fans in. Like, this was, like, very, like, sloppy, too, because they're bringing, like, truck drivers on and stuff like that. It was like, what are you trying to do? You gotta wait a lawsuit waiting to happen here.
Yeah, exactly.
you know. But yeah, so Lex Luger has the Lex Express tour after this, but right before this, it's like he lands in a helicopter onto the deck of the Intrepid, right? And it made perfect. Everything it looked perfect. Like this was the guy, and he wanted a shot at the championship at SummerSlam, but the stipulation had to be that he gets one shot. That was it. He slammed Yokozuna. And, Yokozuna left his feet a little early for him, but
yeah.
I mean, if you had to slam 600 pounds, you try to help the guy out too. If you were 600 pounds, you know,
100%, 100%.
Right. So my anger with it was, I didn't even want him to win the title, but it just made sense. He should have won the title. Now at this point, I'm 20 years old. I'm like, I'm trying to piece together why they would never give this guy the push. I don't understand. I never understood why he couldn't get the push.
Doesn't he beat Yoko by countout at SummerSlam 93?
Yeah, so he got into an accident with a motorcycle a couple of years before that. And he allegedly got a plate put in his arm.
Ooh.
And he would use the plate, his forearm, as like a move, almost like a clothesline type of move. And he would use that as and he knocked Yokozuna out of the ring. Yoko got counted out. Obviously, you can't win the belt on a count out. You have to get pinned or submitted. And they were like, well, you know, why didn't he give him a rematch though? Well, he only had one match, but people retired and people lost retirement matches and came back and wrestled.
Mm-hmm.
It's wrestling. You couldn't find a clause in the contract that you couldn't have him fight for something like a money in a bank type of thing where you have to climb for a briefcase or some shit. Like get him to the point where he needs to be, because he's your guy. You know, he's the guy you could put on the cereal boxes and in the middle of the trucks and that they have to lug the equipment.
Yeah,
and all the toys and all the gimmicks. That's the guy. He's your T-shirt guy. He's your next Hulk Hogan. And with the moveset, and he can actually cut a promo a little bit. It was perfect. So I don't know why they never gave him that push. I never understood it. I just never did.
Yeah, it always confused me. And then to have him be like, so after he wins by countout with Yokozuna, he's built up to basically be like the guy who you're expecting to win the 94 Rumble. And then all of a sudden they have one-legged Brett come into the match. And instead of being like, you know, every man for himself, here I am, here's a great opportunity for me to get a big name like Brett out, he's all of a sudden, he's just like, no, I'm going to defend him. I'll keep him in the corner for most of the match and like, I'll take everybody out. And then when they get to WrestleMania 10, the thing that I don't understand about that is that why didn't they just do a triple threat? Like, what was the logic around each guy having two matches, whoever went first against Yoko and then the winner of that taking on Brett after he fought Owen or if Luger have fought Perfect if Brett won the coin toss? Is that how it worked? Or?
I thought Perfect was injured. That's why he couldn't fight at all. That's why he was the referee. That's what I thought. I could be wrong. I don't know.
Yeah.
But like, go back to the end of 93 though. Like the rest of the world must have hated us. They had the All American team. He called themselves the All Americans, you know, and then they fought the whole foreign team. They really stereotyped these guys terribly.
Yeah.
But Luger's team won the match, right? And then the Rumble, like you said, the co-winner thing was terrible, and I'll tell you why. I'll take you back to 86. And at the time, before I discovered NWA and Dusty Rhodes and the Road Warriors, my favorite wrestler was Paul Orndorff. Orndorff did no wrong.
Yeah.
Orndorff turns on Hogan, best heel turn in wrestling ever. That's my opinion. But I mean, I, people fight me on it every year, but so be it. So Hogan gets the heel turn from Paul Orndorff. They have a cage match on Saturday night's main event. Both of them climb out of the cage. They both jump off the cage. Allegedly, whose feet hit first? One camera says Hogan, one camera says Orndorff. They give it to Hogan, obviously. They're not giving Orndorff the title. We're going to do this shit. And I can think about, as soon as Brett and Luger left the ring at the same time, like, we're going to do this shit again. But it just made for... So now, why not give the, you know, why not give the match to Luger? He's already got the push. And if you're not going to make it a three-man, why not give him the push? No, they gave it to Brett instead. And Brett wins the title because Brett's Mr. Reliable. And Brett was the poster boy in the middle of all the stuff anyway. He was the next generation. You know, and I'm doing my quote fingers. I know you have the camera on, but
yeah,
I'm doing my quote fingers. But it was very lackluster, to say the least. So, and then it just went downhill from there. You know, like he would stay Mr. America, basically, but he feud with DiBiase's corporation at one point. He did another USA Survivor Series team, and he lost that. Then he did a tag team with Davey Boy Smith, and they even lost then. Like, he could even win the tag titles.
Yeah.
He could even win the tag titles. He even lost a house show match, I believe, in your neck of the woods. That was his last match, was, I believe, in where's New Brunswick from you? That's not too far, right? Is that Ontario?
No, that's not Ontario. That's
I'm sorry. So it's far away.
That's another province. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So,
the prairies, sort of.
Give me hockey location. Is it in Quebec? Is it in Ottawa? Is it near Montreal?
Oh no, New Brunswick's its own province.
Its own province. Oh, so it's like north of you, or
New Brunswick.
I'm doing this by memory. I'm not doing this by.
Oh no. I'm looking. I'm looking on a map here. It's like in the middle of Canada. Like, we're on the east, and then it's right in the middle.
So it's the Midwest of Canada.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Okay. I got you. All right. So, like, he teamed with Shawn Michaels, and he even lost that.
Yeah.
So, like, it just didn't, nothing was organic with him. The only thing that was organic was Vince bringing him in to be the bodybuilder gimmick thing, which failed miserably, by the way.
Yeah.
So
randomly, New Brunswick is near Maine.
So it's still East Coast. Maine is like 8 hours north of me.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Okay. So that's not okay. All right. So that's not too far.
Yeah.
I mean, it's far enough to we. I mean, I'm not driving 8 hours.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm just trying to do. I've only been to Toronto once. I've only been to Canada once. So
interesting. That's cool. Yeah.
2000. Jesus Christ, Phil. 2002. Memorial Day weekend.
Oh wow. That's awesome, man. That's great.
I missed the Leafs. I was so pissed. They were in. I want to see a hockey game. I went to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And this is a side note. Now I'm babbling. If you just cut me off, I'm babbling too much.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
I was going to the Hall of Fame. That's what I was going for. And to see a Jays game. Because they were terrible and the seats were cheap.
Yeah.
So, but I wanted to see a Leafs game, but they were on the road against Carolina in the playoffs.
Oh. Oh yeah. 0-2. Yes.
Right. So I'm pissed off because what you guys do in over there, what you did, I don't know if you still do it there, is like what Texas does with like high school and college football on Friday nights. The town closes down. Like nothing's open. And I was like, holy shit, man. Like everything closed down. Like places of interest. Like, no, we got to close down. The Leafs are playing time. Like, the Leafs aren't even fucking here.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's what we do. Hey, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, buddy. You know, I'm sorry. And it was cool. It was really cool. And, I just love being there. We could talk about that another time, but yeah.
Sure, man. Come back anytime on the
podcast. There's a deep, deep history with your town and Vince McMahon and Vince Sr. with, with you know, Capital Wrestling, WWF, Maple Leaf Gardens. There's like classic shit that went on up there. So, you know, it was pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, but it, getting back to Luger, there was this disdain I had for him because he just never got it done. Like, even in WCW, like, it took like certain people to leave the Fed before they even made him a world champion.
Yeah.
And even that was like lackluster. And he had Harley Race as a manager. He still didn't get over. I was like, this is insane. So, yeah. So anyway.
Yeah. I had a couple, like, my theory was sort of like, because I'm not a Brett guy at all. So, like, but I'm not a Sean guy either, which is, but I think, to be fair, I was thinking about this a while, like the last week or so. Growing up, I was a big WCW guy, like Steiners, Harlem Heat, all that stuff. Like, I loved tag team wrestling back in the day. And I remember when Hogan turned on WCW and leg dropped Macho, I was like, 8-year old me was just crushed. I just like, unconsolable for like days after that. And my family's telling me, oh, you know, it's fake, right? And I'm just like, still, like, it may be fake to you, but it's real to me. And I was like, this is crazy. So with, like, I always loved Sting, for instance, too. And then with Luger, I always wondered, and you could probably answer this for me, is, do you ever think that McMahon grabbed Luger because Sting had no interest in going to the WWE back then?
No, he grabbed Luger because he was physically fit to be on the poster of his bodybuilding thing that failed miserably, and then was probably obligated by contract to keep him on to wrestle or transition him into wrestling quicker than he expected, like to build him up maybe. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, because he tried to do the WB, the World Bodybuilding thing. He tried to use that, like, as sports entertainment. Like, he was going to take guys from that world and try to make them pro wrestlers. But he had real legit guys. He had Danny Padilla. He had a bunch of guys who were, like, legit. And I would only watch this stupid show on Saturday mornings because I knew for a fact that he was trying to get guys transitioned to pro wrestlers. And I want to be the first to say, hey, I saw him work out. Like, I had no interest in bodybuilding. I was a fat bastard since kindergarten, you know. I had no interest in being physically fit like that, but I loved wrestling. That's a nice theory that you know, and then just to circle back, I was more of a Brett guy than a Sean guy. Mm-hmm. I rooted for heels. So I really, if I had to jump on, I have to grab a good guy. It was Sting, or it was, you know, somebody else. Like, and I was more of a tag team guy too. So, I get what you're saying in terms of how a young Eric would process that. You know, the thing with Luger is, though, I think that's what happened. I could be wrong, but I'm almost positive that the reason why he was pushed so quick was because the bodybuilding gimmick failed. Not Luger's fault, obviously, but that world was just not. Vince tried. He even had like the Ico Pro, the powdered shit for the workout. Like, he had the banners all over the place. Ico Pro, you gotta want it. And he would have the wrestlers cut promos on their show and vice versa. And there was actually I should have did homework. I'm so sorry. I think they even did a pay-per-view with WBO. Like, they did like a competition. They tried doing that too. But it's just, I don't know. Yeah, there's, but I know why now he didn't get the push after they transitioned him into wrestling. But, and we'll get into that as you finish your thoughts and theories.
Yeah, I always, I agree with most of that. I guess what I was like, now that memory of them both going over the top rope, them being Luger and Brett at Rumble 94, I just was like the way that you hated Lex Luger for not taking the brass ring and running with it. I hated Rhett for literally tying with him and being the first tie.
Because you didn't like Brett and you wanted Luger. You wanted somebody else to win. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
It didn't even have to be Luger. It could have been anybody else, right? So
yeah, that's true. Because I started going to this like retro wrestling watch along thing a month or two ago, and the guy showed WrestleMania 4 where Bad News Brown wins the he breaks the alliance with Brett, and then he wins that over the top battle royal or whatever, and Brett just like loses his shit and like
breaks the trophy.
Breaks the trophy, and at that time I was like, This is like 30, like 40 years later, and I could audibly like hear myself shouting "fuck Bret Hart." the guy I was, my pal I was with, was just like, "Dude, like this guy's a huge Bret mark. He's gonna kick you out." And I was like, "Well, screw that guy. Like, he doesn't know what he's talking about.
He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
That guy is terrible."
Turns out this guy, the guy that runs it, actually runs an indie promotion up here called Junction City Wrestling. So I had him on a couple weeks back, and he was saying like, yeah, Brett was my guy. And I was like, okay. Like he's telling me his life story, and he was like, Brett was my guy. And I was like, okay, I have to cut you off because are you just like going with like was Brett your guy, or was he just like you're going with the flavor of the month? Like, you know how everybody, like, you know how when, spoiler for anyone who hasn't watched Mania yet, but Cody finally finishes the story, right?
Right.
So do you, I feel like with Cody and Brett drawing the comparison there, it's like you're going with the flavor of the year or with the month. I don't know what that phrase is, but you know, where you're just picking that guy specifically for that current time. But I mean, sooner or later, you'll get sick of him. Someone else, do you know Asian Joe on the Discord?
I don't participate. I'm on the cord. I just don't. I know who he is. I know of him. I don't interact with anybody. I should do it, but I was just, I didn't, I, at one point, I didn't know how to turn notifications off on my phone.
I just
signed the shit out, you know? I learned how to do it though, but I should be more active on it. I know who he is though, for sure. Yeah.
So he explained, he was like, because I love Jurassic Express, for instance, from AEW, and like everybody I know from that Discord and from Twitter just hates Jurassic Express. So Joe, we had Joe on for the episode 49, and he was like, so it's not that you hate Bret Hart, it's that you hate like the wrestling part and you're more into the storytelling. And I think kind of that's an accurate way to put it.
Yeah. But the thing is too, it's if you have a favorite period, right? You're emotionally invested in that character. Win, lose, indifferent. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah. 100%.
I don't know if you're how much of a geek you are in terms of comic books and stuff like that. Or like sci-fi or fantasy shit, but like, you know, growing up, I wasn't a big X-Men guy, right? And my friends hated me for it. I didn't dislike the X-Men. I just didn't like emotionally buy invested in characters and buy the fucking comics. I didn't like them. There was so many comics. It was X-Force, X-Factor, X-this, X your sister. Like, it was just ridiculous, right? But I liked Alpha Flight.
Yeah.
And I should be a Canadian. I love hockey. I love Alpha Flight. I just, when you emotionally attach yourself to a character, and I learned this too, and you learn, like, even over the weekend, I'm at these Japanese Joshi shows, and there's grown men oohing and aahing over these chicks, like they're at a boy band concert, right?
Yeah.
But they're emotionally invested in the character. And that's what's beautiful about wrestling, is like you can, no matter where your character is in his or her career, you're with it. I'm a huge Dusty Rhodes guy. Everybody knows that. Dusty's been my guy forever. Dusty, Flair, the Road Warriors. No matter what they did, even when the Road Warriors turned on Dusty, I still love Dusty. Even when Flair turned face for a little while in WCW, I love Ric Flair, you know? But when Dusty wore the polka dots, that bothered me at 15 years old. Because I remember Dusty was just world champion three times. Dusty won the bunkhouse. Dusty won the war games, if you will. He won all that shit, right? But now he's dancing and they with Sapphire, and he's still cutting great promos, but he's wearing the polka dots. You invest emotionally. When Brett turned on the world and declared everybody worse than you except for Canada, I loved it. Why? Because I like Bret Hart as a heel. But if you were a Bret Hart guy from the jump, you didn't give a shit where he was going. You just like Bret Hart. So I don't know if it is the fandom. If you're more in love with the story than the character, then you're not really that in love with the character. You just want the story to progress the way you want it because you emotionally invested your time in it.
Right.
So now what do you do? Right. Mm-hmm. It's like, shit, I already watched 6 months of this stuff. Now what the hell do I do? You know, and how many times in the last 10 years have you watched WWE and you're like, oh my God, they butchered this guy's career or his storyline, or this girl's storyline, or that person's storyline because of politics or backstage crap, or, you know, who had an attitude problem, which brings me back to Lex Luger. But like, how many times have you said that as a fan in the last 10 years if you're watching WWE, right? So, I mean, so now you have to ask yourself, are you a fan of the actual talent of their persona, good or bad, heel or face, or are you a fan of the storylines that they're putting out for those characters? Or, you know, if you, no, that's up to you now.
Yeah, I agree with everything that you just said for that. Actually, you know what it reminds me of too is, I mean, Twitter wasn't around back in like the 90s or early 2000s when like you were well into watching wrestling at that point, and I was at like really, really, really getting into it around like 10, 11 years old to present. And like, it made it better, if that makes any sense, knowing that there was no social media at the time. Because like, you hear about all this AEW back and forth with the fight between Punk and like the Bucks and those
guys.
Yeah,
yeah. We have footage. We have this. We have that.
I'm just like, I don't care. Like, dude's not in the company anymore. Just move on and like do something else.
Kayfabe died. I mean, let me cut you off. Kayfabe died for me in 2005. Mm-hmm. The beginning of YouTube. That for me was the nail in the coffin. Because even when the internet was a thing, like I'm going back to like 93 before I even had internet, when my rich friends had the dial up gimmick, right?
Yeah.
And you couldn't pick up the phone to make a phone call. His mom would get mad at you. I didn't know your mom was on a computer. I had no idea. But right.
Yeah.
But that was, even though like those little message boards and the AOL chat rooms and shit like that, Yahoo chat rooms, even then there was still this mystique about, I didn't want to know, man. I mean, when we there was rumors like, oh, this guy's related to that guy, this girl was married to this guy, and there was rumors of, hey, like there was like, you know, the urban myths, you know, like the who was somebody Andre the Giant and with the Paul White was Andre's son, you know, that was like a big thing. It's like, no, he just has the same gimmick. he didn't have that's not his son.
Yeah,
but you heard these things, and it's like, I didn't want to know, man. But now everybody wants to know because you have a platform. People have they have social media and they want to hear that. And now you ever see these clickbait sites? We have breaking news. What breaking news? I'm watching it, man. It's not breaking news. You just reporting what just happened. Like, it's just not. I want to be the first. Get people on the podcast page. I have a thing on there where you have to give permission to somebody to post something. Mm-hmm. Like administrative rights or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
As soon as something breaks, I'll have the same five people posting the same article.
Yeah.
And then they don't know each other.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it takes away from the mystique of it. I finally accepted it. And I drank the Kool-Aid once I started podcasting, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But in the same breath, kayfabe was the greatest part of it. That's what I was trying to. That's what I was trying to get at. That's my point.
Oh yeah, no. I get that for sure too. I remember like being convinced that it was real, and that like the The part where I realized that it wasn't real was, I think it was WCW Nitro, where Kevin Nash jackknife power bombs Eric Bischoff through the stage, and you're just like, at like 8-year-old me was like, oh my god, like he legitimately killed this dude, and he should be in a neck brace. The next week, Bischoff comes out and he's like literally part of the NWO. No neck brace, no nothing.
Right.
It was like, ah, this isn't real. Everybody who told me it's fake was right. And I was like, ah, such a heartbreaking moment at the time. But
well, yeah. And you're kind of misled too, because at your age and your generation, like a lot of the move sets the guys do now, in my generation, they were finishers.
Mm-hmm.
Like the DDT was a finisher. The superplex was a finisher. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you hit a guy with a power slam now, and he gets up 5 seconds later. It's like, yeah, that power bomb, not be a thing.
Yeah, the power bomb was a finisher. Like, these were finishers. Now it's just somebody's moveset, you know? That's hard for me, too. But what saves me is the emotional investment in the characters. That's what saves me. Every couple of years, I'll latch onto a couple of guys and be like, man, these guys are fantastic. And for the most part, I'm good with calling it too. Like, my boys will be like, man, you were right about Adam Cole. My one friend's like, he's not even 200 pounds, man. He ain't going to do nothing. I'm like, I'm telling you, I saw him work in Ring of Honor. I saw him work in Japan. Give the kid his due. He's going to be a stud. And I don't want to toot my own horn, as Double A would say, but toot toot. But like, when you emotionally invest in a character, that person can do no wrong. Even if they turn, if they go to another promotion, like, they can do no wrong. They may dishearten you as a fan, like, oh my god, I can't believe, like Okada. Mm-hmm. Like, for me, Okada jumping to the States breaks my heart, because like he's so good in Japan, you know. And I'm not saying he's not going to be good in AEW, don't get me wrong, but like, I feel like once the Japanese guys transition into the States, they get misused in terms of their skill set, you know.
Yeah, they definitely water them down.
Yeah, it took Nakamura like a year to be a champion. And then, like, when I was a kid, when they brought somebody over, it was stereotypical. Like, they played like the Orient Express, they played like the Japanese music, they would stereotype these guys into being one typed, you know what I'm saying? He's a karate guy because he's Asian.
Yeah.
Ricky Steamboat's not even, like, when Ricky Steamboat was a deal, they had him doing like vignettes while he was like in a courtyard fighting ninjas with nunchucks. I'm no bullshit. It's on YouTube. You can find it on your own. But like, you know, now it's a little better, obviously. I'm sorry, it's a lot better. But when you look at that, when you emotionally invest in a character, they do no wrong, you know. So that's where your fandom, that's where you challenge your fandom as a, you know, you're like, oh man, that guy's a dick now. Do I still like him? Like, oh man, that guy's a good guy now. Do I still like him? Like, how do you, it just depends on how you deal with it. You know, how you see it, you know?
Yeah. That's like, growing up. I mean, every kid thought that Goldberg was the guy back then. You got the streak and everything. And then, years later, you find out that, like, when he kicked Bret Hart in the face, he legitimately ended his career. Like,
yeah.
I remember at the time thinking, like, no way, this is just like a storyline. Like, he'll come back, and he never did.
They covered Goldberg's, they covered all his bad stuff. He knew three moves.
Mm-hmm.
He had a look. That's not uncommon for wrestling. When I was growing up, that Junkyard Dog was a god from 83 to like 87, from the time he was champion in Mid-South to the time he was a mid-card guy in WWF. Junkyard Dog couldn't work he couldn't work at all. But if he wrestled Harley Race, made him look great. You know, if he wrestled Kurt Hennig, he made him look great. Guys who were way good. When he wrestled Ric Flair on the Clash of the Champions, Flair made him look like $1 million. Couldn't work. Sometimes the character is bigger than the person, you know. So that's what they did a lot of time. They would cover the guy's That's why ECW was so successful, because half that, some of the guys couldn't even work.
Yeah.
But they can talk. You know, I just saw Sandman the other night. He still does the same shtick. He can swing a, you know, a kendo stick and drink a ton of beer.
Yeah, that's literally his moveset.
All he does. Once he'll do a Russian leg sweep once in a while, and he'll do a body slam once in a while. You know, he had a leg drop from the top rope, but he stopped doing that when he hurt himself. Right. So it's like as a kid, you're not seeing that. You're seeing, oh, my God, it's Goldberg. Wow, this guy's awesome. He just squashes everybody. You know, didn't he go undefeated until he beat Raven for the U.S. title? It was like Raven can work. Raven didn't get a chance to work because Goldberg squashed him and took his title.
Yeah, I think he went like 168-0.
Yeah.
Scott Hall tases him.
Right.
And then Finger Poke of Doom.
Starcade or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, Starcade, then Finger Poke of Doom.
That's right. But you see my point. Like, you're investing in the character. Like, look, at Hulk Hogan didn't work here at all. He did his moveset, and that was it. That same time period, you watch anything he did in Japan, it's like night and day.
Yeah.
He had to work in Japan.
Yeah.
Because the talent level was better. He was wrestling guys like Inoki and Baba and some guy Jin, like Bruiser Brody and Stan Hansen and guys like that. So, like, you're investing in the character, you know? Like I said, when Dusty came to WWF, he's wearing polka dots. I'm like, I'm still rooting for Dusty, you know? I'm still rooting for him. He could dance his ass off, but as long as he talks a good game and throws the elbow, I'm fine, you know?
Yeah. I feel that way with Edge, kind of. Like I'll always be an Edge fan, no matter, like, now he's Adam Copeland or whatever.
Yeah. And there's a guy who really had to work at his character. Like, it took him at least a decade to figure out who the hell he was in terms of a character. His work rate was the same. He wasn't really doing anything that was crazy and didn't do anything that was going to hurt anybody. But between the Brood and then him and Christian, and it was like, well, you know, he's a little bit of this, he's a little bit of that. But then when he went solo, that's it. That's all he needed. He needed to be a singles wrestler. That's what he needed to do. And that's what happens with some guys. Yeah. You know, Bret Hart was a tag team guy forever, even when he's wrestling for his dad in Stampede.
Mm-hmm.
Once he became a singles wrestler, the game changed. So a lot of guys, it just takes a break from a tag team or a gimmick change or just a change of scenery, period. You know, Triple H was like that too. You know, he can work his ass off, but he's wrestling Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker on Saturday nights in Atlanta.
Yeah, you know? I remember that.
And then he becomes a snob aristocrat. You know what I'm saying? It just takes that change sometimes to be the person they needed to be, where they want to be in terms of a character, you know. But that's just how wrestling goes, you know.
Yeah, man. So just switching topics to hockey. What are your expectations for the Rangers this year? Now that the season's winding down, do you think they can go all the way? Or
number one team in hockey? Every team that wins the President's Cup usually gets knocked out in the first round. I'm scared, really scared, because I didn't like the coach coming in. Peter Laviolette was a good coach, but he coached teams that didn't emphasize on rounded teams, that they didn't play defense. So he shocked me, shocked the world. And when I was at the outdoor game, I was telling you, like when I went to the outdoor game against the Islanders.
Yeah.
I'll never do that again, by the way. But I went, when I sat and I watched that overtime win, I sat in a car with a bunch of Islander fans, and I try not to rub it in. And I was good. I was a good boy. I swear I was. I was like, you know, I said, they're gonna win the division. They're gonna win a champ. They're gonna win it. I don't know. I'm scared. They can compete. There's a lot of teams in the East that are really good though. Or there's a lot of sneaky teams in the East. You know, you guys are sneaky. You guys just can't get out of the first round for the last 35 years. But I digress. Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
But there's teams that'll sneak up. Like the Islanders were out of it 2 months ago. Now they're 3 points out. Well, they were 3 points out as of like Friday.
Crazy.
But it's those teams like Detroit and Pittsburgh. And those teams scare me because they, you know, the longer you go with those guys, they can knock you out. But the goaltending has been good. You know, Quick's going into the Hall of Fame. You know, it's, and he'll probably go in right after he retires because he's going to do the whole one of the first American, like the most American with the most wins. It's hard, even though the league is dominated by North American teams, it's hard to break the stigma of an American hockey player being really, really good in terms of a position. Goaltenders don't get any love like that no more, man. Yeah. You know, it's always a foreign goaltender that's killing it right now, which is great. God bless him. You know, we had one of the best ever, and he couldn't even win a cup. Mm-hmm. You know, you guys in the 90s had insane goaltending, you know, with between Potvin and all those guys. And
Cujo.
Cujo. Yeah, Belfort for like 5 minutes. Cujo was one of my favorite goalies ever.
Yeah.
You know? You had Grant Fuhr for 5 minutes before he got really hurt, or he got traded to St. Louis, I believe it was.
Yeah.
If he didn't wreck his knee, that team would have won a Stanley Cup too.
Yeah.
Because they had Gretzky and Brett Hull and all the cats. But
there's some crazy story. I don't know if you know this, but like apparently Gretzky wanted to come to Toronto in like 96 when he was a free agent after the Kings, and the Leafs ownership was like, we can pay for Gretzky or we can move from Maple Leaf Gardens to what's now Scotiabank Arena, but turned into the ACC. So it was like, we could get the greatest player who ever played, and that probably puts us over the edge and like breaks the curse, or we can build another stadium. And they picked the stadium, which is like the stupidest thing.
Yeah, ownership tends to. We have the Rangers have the worst ownership in hockey in terms of participation. We hire the best management teams, but our owner also owns the Knicks and he also owns Madison Square Garden. And it's been like a complete nonsense the last 35 years of my life. This guy is like a cancer.
Oh, man.
They put billions into that garden and I can't even get in there without a mortgage payment for a good seat. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. It's like for me, it's different. I go back to like the early to mid 80s. So it's hard. I mean, every year I want the Rangers to win the cup, you know, just to, and when the last time they were there in 14, they were bullied by Los Angeles because they were a big, big team. They were big, scrappy, and they scored goals. This team is so good, and they made the moves. Like, they've gotten deeper with the center line, and they've gotten deeper with the goaltending, and I just hope it transitions into a cup run, man. It's hard because the East is so good, you know.
You know who's amazing, but he's underrated, is Vinny Trocheck. Like that, yeah. That guy's unbelievable. Like everywhere he's gone, Florida, Carolina, guys.
Yeah, he's probably the best face-off guy percentage wise. Mm-hmm. When they started ranking guys like who takes the best face-offs, that's why they signed him, because he wins face-offs and he plays in front of the net. You know, if he was 50 pounds heavy, he'd be Eric Lindros. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but. I digress. Yeah, he's really good. Lafreniere is finally stepping up as the number one pick 3 years ago. So now the kid's finally getting good. But he's also had three different coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like same thing with you guys too. Like you guys had, you know, the management transition. How many guys can you get for Matthews after they got Tavares? It was like, how many guys are you guys gonna get? And then you had no goaltending. They let Soupy go. And then it was like goalie by committee. It was like, okay, I get why you did it, but like, you know, what are you going to do to fix it? You know, you need good in the playoffs. You need a hot goalie, and you need to have finishers, guys who are going to be in the zone on the power play, or special teams guys getting into the power play, breaking up shit, scoring goals. You need good goaltending, and you need guys who can score in odd places. You know. That's what's going to win hockey games. You know, you back in the day, it was defense, but that's not happening anymore. So,
yeah, they seem more built for it this year, the Leafs, like than the last couple of years. Like, Domi and Bertuzzi finally woke up. It took them like 65 games, but they did it.
Yeah.
They picked up this guy, Dewar, from the Wild, who's pretty good, and Kampf is excellent.
Kampf is good, yeah.
The defense, I'm actually impressed. Like, they've actually, like, they've been knocked a lot, but they've played pretty well. Like this Simon Benoit, whatever his name is. Like, holy shit.
Simon Benoit. Yeah.
Yeah, that guy's awesome. Friggin' Liljegren, I think, needs to take a step. Like, he needs to show in the playoffs that, like, look, I can be the second best guy or even better than Riley on the team for defense, because he's the key to me. He's the key on defense there.
X factor. I agree. They're built to win. And if they don't, then maybe Keith is still the coach, right?
Yeah, they'll let him go after this year.
Yeah, 100%. if they don't make it past the second or third round, like, he's got to go. And it's sad because they've done everything except change him.
And Shanahan. I think Shanahan's got to go too, because you literally can't fire Dubas with no explanation other than just saying, yeah, basically it was a power struggle behind the scenes, and then miss the playoffs, for instance, which is how they looked for the beginning of the season. Yeah. Like, they're pulling it off now. But I mean, if they go out in round one again, you got to fire all the management, even though Treliving's in his first year. Like, they should have never got rid of Dubas, for instance. But I don't know. Yeah. It'll be tough because we either get the Panthers or the Bruins in the first round.
Yeah, no, it's like I said, that there's a lot of good teams in the East, man. Yeah. And it's like there's a couple of teams that are really, really good, and then the rest of the league is just like almost above average. The rest of the division, I'm sorry, the rest of the East is a little bit above average. And those are the teams that'll sneak in and go far. I've seen it done with Carolina in 06. I've seen it done with Calgary. I've seen it done with Ottawa a bunch of years ago. I've seen it done with with Florida in 96. Like, you see these teams that are just like, they're not built for the playoffs, but they just get, they jump on the goalie bandwagon and they just start playing really good hockey. It's like, yeah. Oh, wow. Guess what? You're in the finals now. And in hockey, I feel like they manage these teams don't invest more in their management. There's only a couple of teams that do that, like, consistently, you know, like Montreal, and like the Devils do it all the time. And Pittsburgh does it. They invest in their management for long term, and they keep drafting guys and they keep making trades for guys that are going to help their team. And I don't know if it was last season or the season before, the Leafs had that was on HBO. I think it was on HBO or one of those cable.
Where they did that, like, NHL version.
Yeah, I was knee deep in it, man, because and you saw it. Now, I'm not even a Leafs fan, but you saw when management changed hands, it was like they were like left out there, even though they had the same team still at that point. Mm-hmm. It was like it just almost felt like they were naked. And another disappointing season, even though you were successful in the regular season. It's just how it is, man. It's just, it sucks. But the difference is when in certain cities, when teams don't win, it's everything. Like, I live in a city where there's a bunch of hockey is like second rate. You know, this is a baseball and football town. Mm-hmm. Basketball and hockey suck here, you know?
Yeah.
But the fan base is all loyal, but you know, what are you gonna, I don't live where you live, and where you live, it's like, well, you know, baseball was good for a little while, and then you lost, you know, and then after the 90s, it was like, okay. And then the Raptors didn't do anything until about 3-4 years ago. So it's like, it was always about the Leafs, because the Leafs are the team. That's the team. It's the team of the town. It's when they don't win, it's a problem. You know, same thing in Green Bay when football, I hate the Packers, but because I'm a Vikings fan, but in Green Bay, it's all they have there. You know, it's just how it is, you know?
Yeah. How do you feel about Cousins leaving the Vikings for Atlanta?
they gave him a $90 million contract a couple of years ago to throw 30%. He was handing off to a premier running back. He was never successful. He won like one playoff game wherever he was at, and management was okay. Ownership wanted him more than I think than management did. And when they switched management, they were just waiting to trade him when they got the new GM 2 seasons ago. I can't pronounce the guy's name. He has like an African name. But when they switched over to him and got Stillman out, they wanted to get younger, and they let Cook go, and they let Diggs go, and they let everybody go. And once they let those guys go, I knew Cousins was next. They just wanted to trade and get picks so they can guarantee another quarterback. And then they gave Sam Darnold $10 million just to keep the seat warm for a rookie quarterback. I'm like, this is insane. But I mean, this is football. So football is a billion dollar business. They generate the most money, and they can, with the salary cap, they can maneuver stuff all the time. So as the cap gets bigger, teams can finagle stuff. It is what it is. I was never a Kirk Cousins guy. Never, ever, ever. So I'm not really looking forward to Sam Darnold as the starting quarterback of the Vikings in 24.
Oh, man.
I got to be honest with you. It's going to be a shit show.
I'm a Bengals diehard. Like I've loved them since I was 10. Uh-huh. So like I've been through the shitty years. I hate those people. Well, hate's a strong word, but I strongly dislike people who suddenly go from like bandwagon fan to like diehard fan of the team after they've won a title. Like so many New England Patriots fans I know are just like, yeah, we didn't follow them before Brady got there and won like 7 Super Bowls. And I was like, well, are you a fan or are you just a fan of Brady? So
I was at Brady's first game on accident.
Oh, amazing. Oh,
so my dad was living up there and he was dying basically. And it was 2 weeks after 9/11. And I was wanted to go see him. I was going up there to New England to see him every couple of weeks because he was like on his way out. Mm-hmm. And my uncle Mario, who lives there, is from there. He, what do you call it? He is friends with Fred Smirlis, who had like a radio show up there. He was like a famous football player back in like the 80s and 70s. And he was like a high school buddy of his. And he got us like these tickets. Like we were tailgating and we met like celebrities. The Sopranos were there because it was the Jets. The Jets were playing them.
Yeah.
And so my dad, it was like 90 degrees still that day. It was still September. And the Jets punctured Drew Bledsoe's lung. And brought Brady in. That was like his first game. And they lost him in like it was like 13-10 or something like that. But like, yeah, that was his first game. I got to see, I was like, who's this Brady guy? I was like, who the hell's Brady? No one knew who he was, you know?
Yeah.
Because Drew Bledsoe was the guy, you know, that was the guy. And no one knew he was going to be that great, you know? But yeah, I see what you got. It's the bandwagon stuff that happens in every sport. It happens in wrestling, man.
Yeah.
I got friends who hated, you know, Roman Reigns. And now they're like putting the finger up and
yeah, you know, exactly.
I acknowledge him and da, 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 like whatever. But I get it, man. You know, but the thing is, you just stay loyal to your teams.
Yeah.
You stay loyal to your teams and you'll have a better sense of being humble. I am a Mets fan. And you know, you guys all follow me on social media. My team is awful. My team is always awful. It's hard to be a sports fan of teams that aren't good. Yeah, I rooted for the Sacramento Kings and the Knicks my entire life.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and now that the Kings are good, I'm walking around my area with like a hoodie or a jacket on. They're like, ew, Sacramento. I'm like, I had this jacket for 10 years, dude. Where have you been? You don't know me, man. You don't know me. Come on, man. Vikings? I'm like, I've been a Vikings fan since Warren Moon and when Herschel Walker got traded. That's why I became a Vikings fan, because that's a Herschel guy. You know, I couldn't root for the Cowboys because my dad hated the Cowboys. So when Herschel got traded, I had to pick a team. So I picked a team.
Yeah.
I was also like, you know, I was a teenager. What am I going to do? I was a junior high school. But yeah, man, you just, it's the fandom is what drives you to be a sports person. Like you have to be a fan of, if you're diehard of your team, you stick with your team. You don't, your only team, I guess, I don't know. The only way I'll not root for a team is if they move.
Like, see, that's where I am with, like, I'm a diehard Oakland A's fan, and now that they're moving to Vegas or like for Sacramento, I'm just like,
yeah,
I don't know if I can root for these dudes anymore. Like, right. sure, they're crap, but I'm like, I've hated John Fisher. Like, it's ingrained in every A's fan to hate John Fisher. Like, I've hated that dude literally since I started cheering for the team in 06. And I'm just like, now he's moving them. And I'm just like, oh, he won, because that's all he's ever wanted was to just move out of Oakland.
Right. So like it just takes, it speaks a lot. Like if you keep following him, you're not wrong. If you stop rooting for him, it depends on which generation you speak to. Cause I have friends who are Raider fans and they were bouncing from Oakland to LA for like 20 years. Mm-hmm. Because their owner was an idiot. But again, when he moved to Vegas, people were still Raider fans. I don't know if I can root for the Vikings if they move. That's why I'm not a New York football fan, because don't get me wrong. I'll root for the Jets and the Giants if they're in the Super Bowl, or if they're not playing the Vikings. I'll root for them, like if I'm going to a game or something, but they're not my team. But they play in New Jersey. Like, they play in New Jersey. And I didn't want to root for the Bills. So yeah, when I was a kid. So like, I, whatever. But I see your point. Like, you wouldn't be wrong, in my opinion, you wouldn't be wrong if you stopped rooting for them. If you do root for them, hey, you're gonna get a new ballpark. Hopefully you'll get new management, and hopefully they'll do the right thing with all this money that they're getting from the luxury tax and start buying some fucking players. I'm sorry, mm-hmm. Pardon my French.
Oh no, not a problem.
Buying some players. And actually doing something in the draft and stop playing money ball. Or you could play money ball, but just start drafting kids that are going to stay there and not let them go, you know? So, yeah, I get it, man.
I still remember, I think it was like 2013 or 14, where they're on this crazy run. Like, they had that team where, like, Donaldson, Cespedes, Canna, Laurie, all those guys are like, in their – hitting the ball like crazy, and they're like, yeah, we're gonna trade Cespedes for John Lester and like some other guy from to Boston. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, you're literally ahead of Boston by a game or two, and they're like, hey man, we're gonna trade our best player, the guy who stirs the drink, and for a pitcher who has the yips and can't throw to first base. And I was like, what? Why?
Yeah.
Why? Yeah. It was insane. I think that was – no, it was 2015, because that was the year Royals beat the A's in the wild card game, and then I think they ended up winning against Giants? Or no, maybe the Giants won that one.
In 2015? 15, they beat the Mets in the World Series. The Royals. You mean, yeah. I don't know. I forgot what the playoffs were, but yeah, no, point taken, man. I mean, it's not – again, it's just the fandom, you know. It just brings you back to a time when you first latched on to that, whether it's a wrestling character or a ball player, or a hockey player, or an athlete, to that matter. You just invest in your emotion in guys. Like, you know, there are guys that I root for, and they're terrible people in real life. You know, mm-hmm. I love Herschel Walker, but he politically, I think don't even get me started. But like, his politics are terrible. But he was my guy growing up. You know. I loved Chris Benoit, but you know, yeah, exactly. Chris Benoit killed his family. Like, you know, what are you gonna do? Like, you can't, you know. I loved Doc and Daryl, but they were junkies and they were womanizers. And I met Doc a few weeks ago, and thank God he's not doing that now, because he's old and beat up. But like, these guys weren't good people, but you know, you just tend to latch on to your guys, you stick with your team, you stick with your guys, you know. Yeah.
Oh, Cespedes was 2014, that trade.
2014, right. And then he got traded to the Mets.
Yeah. Oh, that was when what's his name? Bumgarner pitched like 50 innings in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, single-handedly carried the Giants to a victory. I mean, to a World Series. Oh, my
yeah,
God.
Yeah, they won. I think they won two rings in 10 years, the Giants.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love those teams. My one of my childhood friends is a diehard Giants fan, so I follow those teams too. I love the Posey, and you know, we actually, the Staten Island Minor League Baseball team just signed Pablo Sandoval.
Amazing.
Yep. So I'm gonna get to see Pablo on opening day, May 3rd.
That's great, man. That's great. Pretty,
yeah.
Yeah. Before we get out of here, do you have anything coming up for the show that you want to plug or anything like that?
I recorded something today. The show dropped about an hour after we started. I have to check. Hopefully, I think it dropped. Let me just double check here on my phone. But yeah, I recorded something today because I had the equipment out. I knew I was going to talk to you. So I had started writing stuff on Saturday just to make sure I had all my stuff down. And I was writing down, and I took all the results from this past weekend. And I did that. So, yeah, episode 492 should be up and available. Let me just double check here. Blah, blah, blah. Yes, it is. And, yeah, episode 492 is up. So if you guys will feel so inclined, you can go pick it up at TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com, ShiningWizardsNetwork.com, and I believe, like, every single platform that puts out podcasts, like Amazon and all this other crap. Spotify, definitely Spotify.
Yep.
and all that good stuff, like iTunes, and I don't have an iPhone anymore, but yeah, all that good stuff, you can get it there. So
awesome.
If you're inclined, it's no, you know, no big deal. But yeah, I did something. I was really inspired this weekend. Like, I was excited.
Well, you went to like 27 shows. Like, how could you not be inspired?
I went to 5 shows in 3 days. Yes. The record, by the way, I've only done 2 shows in a row my entire life.
Oh man!
So that was a little. I mean, I'm old, man. I'm gonna be 50. I don't have the tolerance anymore for being around people. Mm. Like, I actually walked out on one of the shows, the 4th show, and I'm mad about that. But I explained it in the podcast.
Yeah.
It was just a shit show. It was terribly booked. They started almost an hour late, and it was just not good, you know. And I was actually to support my friend. You know, my friend was on the card. You know, Joel Gertner was on the card.
Oh, I love Joel Gertner.
He's my buddy, and I didn't even know he was on the card until I was in a restaurant eating a fucking cheesesteak, and I looked at the mat. I was like, "Is there a card listing for tonight?" And my boy hands me his phone. I'm like, "Oh!" So I messaged Joel. I'm like, "Dude, I had no idea you're on the card. I'm sitting 5th row." I was like, "All right, cool." So I'll try to see you if you're around. And his wife was running the gimmick table, but there was like, I just left. After I saw him in a match after that, I bounced. But I explained it in the podcast. So,
how old's Joel Gertner now? Is he 50 or?
He's got to be either my age or like maybe he's got to be younger though. I think no, maybe I don't know. He lives in Brooklyn. He's I met him through a mutual friend. Like
48, September 20th, 1975.
Yeah. So he'll be 49 this year. So I'm a year older than him. Nice. I was born in 1974, but he is a tremendous soul. Really good dude. Does a lot of charitable work with St. Jude's and all that. So. He's a great guy, and he was a part of something really special, like really special.
Yeah.
So
I used to love those promos, like his back and forth with Cyrus the Virus was just like iconic. You know?
Right, exactly. And he was just great with the Dudleys too, and yeah, he was just fantastic. He was fantastic.
That's great. So, yeah. Did you watch both nights of Mania or no?
I did. I did. I'm all more caught up.
Awesome.
And I got Raw on mute right now.
Nice.
And The Rock is in the ring with Cody, so that should be interesting. Mm-hmm. But yeah, night two was better than night one. I talk about that on the podcast, and I reviewed both shows, and I talked about my little excursion to Philadelphia. And I'm just excited. If you're not excited to be a fan right now, with everything going on in wrestling, you got to check your pulse maybe. Maybe go see a doctor or something, man. There's a lot of great things going on, dude.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been helping out Tom's Midwestern roundup. Tom, high five, Tom.
It's my guy.
Yeah, he told me he's like, oh, you're having Phil on? Say hi on my behalf. And I'm don't you guys talk every day? And he's like, yes, but still.
Yeah, he's got that Midwest charm. He's a good dude. He's solid. He understands like when he started his podcast, he understands, like, same thing with you. You're like, you guys, like, we did X amount of things before we did this, and we did this, and they try to let you guys try to do your get your own style and all that. And I'm happy for him, and I'm happy for anybody who can just do that on a regular. Mm-hmm. Anybody who creates is good, you know. Anybody who could create something out of nothing is okay with me. So that's my guy. We've hung out, he's come to New York a few times. He's a solid dude. Him and his wife are like, they're beautiful souls. So I got nothing but love for Tom. I got nothing but love for Tom, for sure.
Absolutely. Are you big into deathmatch wrestling at all or not really?
I watched it in the 90s for FMW and IWA and Wing. And I'm well-versed in the 90s stuff. But
yeah, we're covering a show. I say we because we're both watching Ruthless Pro Wrestling out of Detroit. Mm-hmm. They ran a show in New Jersey at the H2O, like Matt Tremont's promotion.
Yep.
So I got to watch that. So once we're finished here, I'm going to start that. But like friggin' There's one match, I forget who it is. I think it's actually Tremont versus Judge Joe Dredd, who's like a big up and comer. He's only been in the business for 3 years. And
Okay.
they're having a light tube razor blade table match. So basically there's like razor blades on top of light tubes and they have to throw each other through a table. And I'm just like, who thinks of this stuff?
Yeah, it sounds gross, but there's a following for it, you know. What are you gonna do? Like,
Oh yeah, it's crazy. Like, so I've been watching a lot of that recently. Brendan Haney got me into a lot of deathmatch wrestling, like CZW and
yeah,
stuff like
that's
that.
some crazy stuff, man.
I
Yeah, that's some
it's
crazy stuff.
it's weird because now that I watched like yesterday when I watched Mania, everybody who I was on this Mike Peterson stream with, wow, lots of name dropping. But
Well, yeah, I mean, because you're engulfed in it, right? So now you, right? So it's, what are you gonna do? Yeah.
yeah, exactly. But they were like, oh, this is a pretty good death match, and I'm just like, or hardcore match between Street Profits and Karrion Kross's stable,
Yeah,
and
Prime Tournament.
I'm just like, I just saw friggin' some guy lose like half the skin on his arm going through like a barbed wire table.
Right.
Like this is nothing for
Exactly. There's levels to this, man. There's levels to this. Start reading. Start watching.
It was funny listening to Snoop on commentary yesterday and he's like, oh my God, look what they're doing to each other. And I'm just like, this is nothing. This is
Yeah.
like, who
If
cares?
Snoop only knew. If Snoop only knew.
And on that note, right before we get out of here, I'll just say, you can follow me as always on Nattering with E on Instagram, E underscore Freeds on Twitter. And we now have an email address, Nattering with E, all one word, at gmail.com. We run on Visionaries Global Medias on Wednesday. So we're recording on a Monday, but this will drop on Wednesday. Episode 50. Hopefully we'll get in another 950. That's the plan anyways. I got enough time to do that. So
Plenty time.
Bill, thank you, sir, for coming on. You are welcome any friggin' time, man.
Thank you, my friend. It's been a pleasure, and I hope you much success to you and the crew. All right.
Thank you, sir. All right,
All
see
right.
you, people.
Take him in.